This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
Remember, remember, the 5th of November. The gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Because why wouldn't we celebrate trying to blow up Parliament, apparently?
I don't know the lines.
Hello, and welcome to Teabags and Joysticks, the kinky video game podcast.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cy. And for the record, if it wasn't entirely obvious, that was a lot of sarcasm at the start.
A lot of sarcasm? Really? We do sarcasm?
Yes. Yes. Just a little bit. It's kind of the British humour.
Oh. Yeah, I get it now. Yeah.
How are we, Chris?
Doing all right, yeah. Happy that is Friday.
Ah, Fridays are always good.
Friday is good, isn't it? Yeah.
However, we ought to acknowledge it before any big ones happen.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's always a big one happening, if you know what I mean. It is November. It is coming to the 5th of November, and bonfire weekend.
Yeah.
There are a lot of fireworks going off right now, and there's not much that we can do about that.
Nah, sorry. You'll hear some from my background and some from Cy's background. And this is going to be the case whichever day we record this weekend. If we're going to put out a show, there is going to be fireworks.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
It's like, we will do what we can to filter the worst of them, but unfortunately some are going to get through.
Yeah.
But anyway, with that said, what's the topic today, Chris?
A topic today, we are... I'm going to ask some questions.
You're going to ask some questions?
Yeah.
Are you going to ask the questions?
Well, I am asking some questions. You are asking some questions, but we are not going to be the original question poster.
No, we're not. So... this was kind of my idea. We are going to head over to Quora, which, if anyone doesn't know, is kind of like Yahoo Answers of old. Or, as it may otherwise be described...
a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
You know, I'm pretty sure Alec McGuinness would have described it as that if it had been in character as Obi-Wan at this point. Because we found some interesting, awkward fucking questions on there, but some of them, no.
Some of them, yeah.
But before we get to that, what's the tea, Chris?
I want to do Sports Ball Corner, but you haven't got the soundboard on, so...
Insert soundboard here.
Sports Ball.
So, a professional footballer has come out.
I saw this. It's Australian, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, he is Australian.
Yeah, Australian League.
Name of Josh Cavallo.
Josh Cavallo. I know nothing about the Australian Football League. I know very little about sports, full stop.
He plays for Adelaide United.
Okay.
Which is in South Australia.
Did he come out as gay or bi?
He came out as gay, yeah.
Nice. Congratulations, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, the response has been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
As you probably would expect.
Well, yes and no. I mean, football's always one of those sports that I associate with being very... very dominated by a culture that doesn't particularly take well to it, in my experience.
Yeah, right. I am more talking about the PR side. Who is going to come out and say homophobic things as a football club to a player who has just come out?
There have been incidents of a few players coming out and saying things in the last few years, so maybe not quite as positive as you may think.
True, yeah. We've had incidents in rugby union, for example.
We've had incidents in football itself.
Yeah, of course. And of course, if you're Australian, we're talking about soccer.
It's football. You play it with your feet. It is football. Don't play it with your socks. You play it with your feet.
Anyway.
It's a point of contention. The game originated in the city that I'm from. Like, yes. It's a point of contention for me. I may not be a sports person, but it's something that just grinds my gears.
You know how the word football came from, right?
I'm guessing because you use your foot to kick the ball.
No, the word football came about because the game was played on foot. As in, you're standing.
As opposed to what? Horseback?
Yes. Yeah, that was sarcasm. Like polo.
Don't even get me started on polo. Like, you tried to explain cricket to me the other day, and this just didn't, no. I just, no. It's like... Anyway. It's going to be a new thing at some point. Like, you trying to explain various different sports and things to me because... No.
Anyway, the point I was about to bring up was the whole response by other football clubs kind of congratulating Josh on his coming out. And that included Newcastle United. He has recently been taken over as... with the Saudi Arabian government as the owner.
Ah, yes, this could be... Yes, because it's not exactly a place that's known for being safe for gay men.
Oh, not at all, is it? and a lot of football fans have been very quick to point out their new ownership.
Point it out in general, or point it out in the context of them congratulating a player coming out?
Both, really. I mean,
because, you know, one is potentially people just being generally xenophobic, and the other one is, you know, there is actually a point to be made here in terms of the difference of...
In terms of actual human rights records. Yeah. Saudi Arabia. It's been pretty horrendous. And, yeah, there had been... protests, like banners and stuff, by the oppositions of Newcastle United. It led to a police investigation and eventually decided there was nothing wrong with the banners. And I would intend to agree.
I mean, it's... I haven't seen them. Let's be very clear, I haven't seen any of the context of this because sports is not my world.
Mm-hmm.
If the comments were just protesting the ownership and the human rights violations by extension,
yeah,
it's right to protest.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning or dismissing anything that was on them, because I don't know what was on the banners, but, like, purely from the stance of, if you are protesting just the owners and just the human rights issues of the owners therein, there is a right to protest.
Yeah, that's... basically that. Yeah, I
fair
agree.
Enough, but it's interesting to have a club ownership come out and say one thing in public and have completely different actions.
Exactly. It's all a PR stunt.
I don't know. I always hesitate labeling anything as PR stunts these days, because I've just reached that point where I'm not even sure what is and isn't anymore. Half the outrage that you see is just manufactured these days as well, so...
Yeah, true.
I'm at that point where it's just like, I just look at it and go, okay, this is something I care about, or this is something I don't.
No, but, yeah, take nothing away from Joseph coming out, and...
I would say, that would be my thing. Like, the big story here is not that. The big story here is that we finally got a player in a sort of a premier position... within the sport sort of thing, coming out as gay openly.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder, like, will we see more? Because I know there was the big thing, was it last year or the year before, of a Premier League footballer
who
setting up wanted to come out but didn't.
Yeah, he set up a Twitter account and and everything. And to be honest, we're still not sure if it's an actual person.
You see, my thing is this, regardless of whether it was or not, it achieved the goal. It got people talking about it.
Yeah, true.
To me, like, that's the important bit with regards to that bit. Like, it got people talking. It got the conversation out there about, you know, why are people scared to come out in this sport, etc.
Yeah. I don't know if it would lead to more football players coming out. And obviously, the interactions between teammates and interaction between fans is a different matter.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that was the big thing that was revealed by the Premier League footballer on Twitter, isn't it? It's like, people are still very oddly divided on this. And it's exactly who you expect it to be. It's exactly who you expect it to be that has the problems. Like, I'm sorry, but like, people may not like me saying that, but it's the truth. Like, you look at these crowds and you see exactly the sort of faces that you expect to see are being the ones coming forth and spouting the rhetoric that is disgusting, quite frankly.
We have seen from the aftermath of the Euros final that football fans can be very, very harsh. And they would say things that they would say things that they wouldn't normally dare to say. Because
here's the problem: I don't think it's things they wouldn't normally dare to say. I think it's things that they would say in amongst the people that they thought were like-minded.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
I think that's the big problem, that there are a lot of people out there that will act one way and say another.
Yeah.
Has the player in question, I'm sorry, I forgot his name.
Josh,
has he played another match since coming out?
I believe he has. I'm not entirely sure. I don't follow the Australian Soccer League, I'm afraid.
Right. Because I would be curious to see if there was any incidents at the next couple of matches. Because it's all well and good the club's coming out and going, we support. It's all well and good the teammates coming out and saying, we support. The fans are an entirely different matter. As you pointed out, we have seen before.
Yeah. I would also point out the Australian fans are just from, you know, from a very far away angle. I don't think they are as tribal as English fans, I don't think.
Right.
Or European fans in general.
Okay. I think that's where it would come down for me. It's like, don't get me wrong, I'm not wanting to overshadow the guy, but I would want to sit there and go, okay, let's see how this plays out, because I don't want any bad to come to the guy. I don't want there to be any problems with the crowds, etc. But this is a sport that, I will be very honest, I don't have the highest opinion of when it comes to these matters. And so I sit here and go, let's see how that ends up playing out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's that for my tea, I guess.
That's the end of Sports Ball Corner.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Can we have like a full-time whistle at this point? What's on your tea, sir?
My tea is, do you know what this is today? Or more to the point, do you know what this episode is? But that's...
This episode? This is the 26th episode?
I'm going to assume you got that right, because I haven't double-checked the number. But that's not what I'm referring to.
Okay. Yeah.
So, this episode is actually our anniversary episode, which kind of makes it appropriate that we've got fireworks going off.
Fireworks.
Because this episode will go out a year to the day of the first episode. Hey. And I think we're recording roughly a year to the day as well.
Well, we didn't have fireworks on the first night we recorded, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we recorded earlier. Yeah. Either way, like, I was looking at the timeline earlier. It's just like, apparently, it is a year to the day on the date that this goes up since we did the first episode.
Yay.
And I wasn't expecting that. Okay. I mean, we should at least do a round of applause. And oh, how things have changed.
Oh, yeah. Things have
you actually gone back and listened to our first episode? Because I did recently, and the sound quality on that is rough.
Yeah, both of us had really shit setup.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's what happens when you start in a pandemic and you don't really plan it too far forward beyond, hey, you know what, let's try this.
Yeah, let's try this. We're still trying hard, yes.
We're definitely trying. Would you say you're enjoying it, though, Chris?
I am enjoying it. It can be frustrating at times, but yeah, overall, I am enjoying it.
It's definitely been an interesting journey.
Mm.
And we've got to work on some fun projects. Like, we've had fun guests on. We had Ian on. We've had Wasp on. Actually, no, I can't say that one because we've not had that on yet.
Yep,
no. But okay, we've got other things in the works. Let's say that. but you know, it's been a fun year, and you know, that's kind of my tease. It's like, yay, we got here.
Good.
I actually looked up a system. I'll try that again because I apparently don't have my teeth in today. I looked up some statistics, and apparently most podcasts don't get past their first 6 episodes. Which Fair I enough. Always found quite interesting. It's yeah. like, here we are on 20. But yeah, like, that's kind of my tease. It's like, goers, it's been a year. Like, yeah. I don't, maybe that's a bad
What's
thing.
What's the next milestone? What's the next milestone? 50?
We aren't Nintendo. or do you mean the milestone episode?
The milestone episode. Like.
I mean, that. Yeah, probably around 50, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe it's bad etiquette to blow our own trumpet, but, I mean, I think it's appropriate this time.
Yeah, it's fine.
But anyway, shall we move on to the main topic of the day?
Yeah, we can do.
I mean, we did have a moment where we had, like, nearly no fireworks, and now they're ramping up again, so let's just plow on.
Yeah. Again,
we are headed
it's gonna happen.
Into some of the question section on Quora.
Yeah.
And let's start with a straightforward one. What does BDSM stand for, Chris?
BDSM. It's a weird one because they don't stand for 4 things. They stand for 6 things.
Yeah.
It's bondage and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Domination and submission.
Yep.
Sadism and masochism.
Indeed.
So it really should be BDDSSM.
I mean, that just sounds like a medical handbook.
Yeah, so are you into BDDSSM?
I don't know why, I just think it does. Under the BDD edit. I can't even do it. Well, let's just kind of walk back for a second. Let's just like... This isn't going to be the most sort of directly targeted episode in terms of, like, we're trying to get to, like, all the nitty-gritty on certain kinks like we sometimes try to do.
No.
Like, the intention here is more, like, we have a bit of fun, like, yeah. We don't want to do an episode where we're hitting, like, the nitty-gritty stuff when we've got all the fireworks and everything in the background. And we just thought this could be a nice bit of fun.
Yeah, we're going to get to some silly questions that people have asked on Quora as well. Not just these kind of standard, what is this kind of question. Like, no.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that there's a few of these that are interesting, like, just as general questions, but not necessarily stuff that we would get into as a full topic or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a good time to kind of answer a couple of those as well.
Yeah.
So do you want to pick out one of the next ones, Chris? Because we have a full document of questions that we've gone through.
We have a lot.
Pulled some good ones out.
Yeah. Let's try this one. What is a good BDSM dom name besides the classics, which, like Daddy, Mr., Master, etc.?
Now, I mean, Sir is always a like standard one, but that's kind of a classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one friend who calls me Zaddy, which is, I'm still getting used to that one.
Right. What's this Zaddy?
Apparently, it's like a better version of Daddy. I don't quite know. Like, okay. It was one of those moments where it's like, it's a younger guy. It's someone that I knew through uni.
Yeah.
And it's one of those moments where I kind of sat there and went, I don't understand today's language.
Yeah, because when you first said it, I'm like, is it a daddy, but for Gen Z is?
I don't know. But he's just like, it was one of those where I'm just like, okay. To be honest, I'm not even sure. I mean, one thing I will say is that a lot of the classic ones that they've pulled out are gendered.
Yeah.
And I actually don't know this, so I'm curious if you do. Do you know any gender-neutral terms? Because we have plenty of gender-neutral and non-binary, etc. members in our community.
True, true.
But I don't actually think I know off the top of my head any neutral terms, apart from possibly when you get in towards things like pup, handler, rigger, where they're very sort of kink-specific.
Owner?
Owner, yeah. Owner works.
Yeah.
I can't think of any others off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, sir and ma'am are definitely gender-specific. Towards the binary.
I know some people do use sir more as a neutral. I mean, now, admittedly, the reason that's occurring to me is I've been watching a lot of Star Trek and things lately, and that's a constant.
Yeah, I was thinking, that's Captain work?
Oh, Captain, my Captain. I mean, I guess. It just depends on what you decide with your dom, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, if you were to make up one, what would you go for?
That's a good one. I mean, I guess it's kind of a classic in a way, but I kind of like the word boss.
Yeah.
And that's a word that's got like amalgamated into all sorts of like gender expression, because you've got like girl boss, you've got sort of boss referred to like your general manager, you've got sort of boss man and all that kind of thing. So I guess that kind of works.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, I've been called boss before when doming.
I think this is maybe going to be the question that I put on our Spotify version of the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we can add a question to every episode. And I think this is going to be one that I put on. It's just like, what's some good gender neutral terms.
Yeah.
I put it on our social media as well.
Yeah, okay. I propose captain.
I propose boss, and I'm genuinely curious to see what other people come up with, because it's just like, I don't know any of these terms and I'd really like to.
Okay. So I think that one's answered. Next.
Yeah. Okay, let's go with, what's the differences between BDSM and hardcore BDSM?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. This one made me chuckle.
Yeah, BDSM is your... We've explained what BDSM is. And hardcore BDSM is the same thing.
So, you see, I took this... like, there's a few different ways you can take this. Because if you're talking about pornography, hardcore stuff is usually the stuff that involves penetration.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could see how you could do like a softcore and a hardcore in that respect. And then otherwise, like if you're just talking general terms, my mind goes to kind of what we would call edge play. So things where like there's deliberate marking and drawing of blood and sort of that sort of thing, which is an area that I don't tend to go near that much.
Mm.
Like, that's just... that's an area that doesn't really interest me.
Usually they're referred to as like, extreme BDSM.
Yeah.
Also, I would say, there is actually a lot of BDSM porn that doesn't involve like actual sex.
Well, yeah, and that's why I wondered whether it might be more of a pornography thing.
But then, would you not class like a really? I don't want to use the word hard.
A rough session.
Yeah. Would you not class, for example, a rough ball busting scene, like hardcore BDSM?
I mean, yes, but I mean, putting aside all of the whole, like, what's defined as extreme, etc., because that's a whole other conversation that we're not going to get into right now.
I mean, there's no line to be drawn. There's a kind of a, okay, like, this is towards that, but this is not, it's not a line on the sand.
I mean, yeah, I guess it would. But then in pornography, like, hardcore is a very particular term that tends to refer to penetration, which is why I was kind of approaching it that angle.
Yeah, but then I would also argue, like, that kind of tends towards, like, the vanilla porn industry.
Well, yeah, that's true. This is very true. This is very, very true. But, I mean, I guess that's the only answer I can offer up for that one myself, and it sounds like you don't have much of a better one.
Nah.
So tell me, Chris, why are there no kinky adult video games?
Are there not?
Are there not? I'm not the one asking the question, I'm just repeating it.
Okay.
Because I thought this was an interesting one, because we are a video game podcast as well.
Yes, we are.
And I think, like, I can't name you many off the top of my head, I'll be very honest. Mm. But there are definitely kinky video games out there.
There are. Lots of them are not exclusively about kink.
No, a lot of them aren't, but I would say there's definitely in that niche.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'll give a quick shout out to, what's the safe word here? Because I know that they did an episode about kinky video games, which was quite interesting. Mm. You mentioned last week, and you'd mentioned it before on the podcast, yes. Robin Morningwood, which I think probably qualifies as a kinky video game.
It does, yeah. Well, yeah, the first scene of the game, you get tied up to St. Andrew's Cross, so...
Oh, wow, okay. I didn't know this, because I've not had a chance to play this yet. But yeah, I think there's definitely some out there. I couldn't name you them off the top of my head. Maybe that's something that I should go and do at some point. But yeah.
Well, if not...
Can you think of any others?
Second Life?
Does Second Life count as a game?
Well...
Also, is Second Life still a thing? Because now there's the... Facebook Meta...
I don't know. I've never played it. I know it was a thing at least.
Oh, like, just sidebar right now. It's just like, why is Facebook trying to reinvent Second Life? Because that's basically all they're doing. It's like, didn't take off the first time, guys. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely plenty out there. You just need to look around, because I think the big thing is, they're out there, they're just not tended to be listed on Steam or the Play Store or the Apple Store, etc. It's just like, you're going to have to go to specialist retailers for this.
Yeah, because, you know, Google and Apple are not putting them on their thing.
Well, exactly. Not unless they make a mistake, which has happened before.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me, do doms actually miss their subs when they're not around?
Yes, absolutely they do. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. From my perspective, they do. And I've expressed before, I think, like, my thing with a sub is there tends to be a little bit of emotion involved. It's not entirely a neutral position. Mm-hmm. Some people can do that neutral positioning. I'm not one of them. Like, if I'm playing with a guy and like, we've got to the point that I'm considering him to be my sub and not just a sessional like play, then there's definitely some level of emotion linked there. And yeah, we do miss our subs. Oh, yeah. Like,
I agree.
I mean, me and you are slightly different because we're boyfriends as well. But like, you've known me have a couple of other subs that I play regularly with, and you know I miss them and miss what we do with them.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
So here's one for you. Are Tauruses, as in the star sign, dominant or submissive?
I don't know. I go for submissive. I don't actually know. I'm just making things up.
Do you know any Tauruses?
Yes.
Who?
My brother.
Hi, me as well.
Oh. Wait. Oh yeah, your birthdays are quite close together.
Mm-hmm. The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a secret that all Tauruses keep, and I'm going to spoil it now. We're all actually switches.
Yes, because
I will be in trouble with the Taurus High Council. But the information is out there in the void now. Do with it as you wish.
Do I do a serious one or do I do?
I don't know.
Okay. So, is it wrong that I'm shaming a guy because he's into feet?
I mean, does the guy like it? That's the question.
Which guy?
Huh?
Which guy? The question asker or the guy that the question sets out likes?
The guy who is being shamed.
Okay. Oh, does he like being shamed? The guy who is being shamed. Oh, I see.
Kink shaming is his kink. I don't know. Like, the thing is, like, it's not if you are doing it just to be a dickhead. If, however, the person that you are talking to with and doing the shaming with, etc., is into that, and they have this whole humiliation, degradation, like, shaming kink as well, why not?
I mean, I think from the context that they're not doing the shaming for fun.
I mean, I'm trying not to project intentions on the question asker.
Okay.
Although I do agree with you, it does seem that way. But my answer, like, a serious answer would be, like, it depends. If the guy enjoys it, what's the problem with it?
Yeah.
You know what? Let's go on a similar angle of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, how do I deal with a kink-shaming comment? And I'm going to augment this a little.
Right.
And go, let's say that this is in the context that you're not into it.
Yeah. Right. How do I deal with it? That's a difficult one. I mean, you can laugh it off, obviously. You can try to explain your kink, but then if they are kink shaming you, they're probably not really going to listen to you.
You know what you could do?
What?
You could challenge them to a Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel.
You can challenge them to
a Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel.
It's time to duel!
I don't know. I'm being silly. No, but like, I guess it depends on the context, doesn't it? Like, if it's just someone making a random comment about it, I tend to just ignore it.
Yeah.
If it's someone trying to be a smart ass with me, I'll give them a quip back. And then if it's someone, like, actually, like, if you're having a conversation and someone says it and they don't realize that's what it is, then I'll point it out. You know, it very much depends on who it is and the context.
Yeah.
Although it does remind me of the, I don't know if I've ever told this story. When I was at university, no one knew that I was poly at first.
Right.
And then there was a documentary broadcast on the TV about being polyamorous. Louis Theroux, I think it was. Terrible documentary, very clearly angling at something if you're in the community. But it was fascinating to hear people around me talking about polyamory. And just hearing a lot of the misconceptions about it, some of which had been promoted by this documentary. And then eventually getting asked what my thought on it was. And that was the moment they found out that, yeah, I because this was at the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I have a boyfriend. And I have another boyfriend, and he has a husband. Yeah. So to me, it's just normal.
Yeah.
I'm just watching everyone be like, what?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you can turn it into a moment of comedy for yourself and just watch everyone fall around as they realize, oh, shit, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Yeah, that can happen a lot. Yeah.
That's always one of my favourite things, is like watching the cogs turn as people realise what, oh yeah, I have two boyfriends means.
Does that really comes as kink shaming though? If you are, well, okay, that comes to kind of accidental kink shaming. Because you're not really shaming that person.
But it's still kink shaming, and it's a kink shaming comment.
Yeah, okay.
And I mean, I'm not saying polyamory is a kink. But, like, it's kind of, you can translate that scenario. It's like, if people are, like, joking around about a particular thing and you've got the willingness to sit there and go, well, actually.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the type of person that can do that, it can be interesting to watch people's reactions.
Yeah.
I will admit to having done that once or twice.
But overall, if you're listening to this podcast, just don't be the one doing the kink shaming.
Yeah, just, well, to be fair, I don't think many people listening to the podcast will be.
No.
But, yeah, just, I mean, call it as you are, let it ride, or correct it. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to make that judgment call.
Yeah.
It's time to duel!
Yeah.
Or you can issue them to a duel. How about we move on to the next question?
Yeah.
And
it's my question, isn't it?
It is. I apologize. I forgot who asked that.
Is there a correlation between people who like spicy foods and soda to people who like BDSM and choking each other?
Huh?
I don't know. Somebody asked that question. Is there? Answer me that. Yes or no?
I'll answer your question with another question. Is there a correlation between people who like Marvel movies and Star Wars and people who like water sports? What is, why would there be a correlation?
I don't know. Who on earth asked that question?
The one that gets, like... You know the bit that throws me there? It's not the spicy food or the fact it's a foodstuff at all. It's the soda.
Yes.
But then it's also that they went to choking.
Yeah.
Like, if that question had been, is there a correlation between spicy food and people who like BDSM and pain play... Yeah, right. I can kind of see the logic behind that one.
Yeah. If you read
spicy food and soda?
Soda, yeah.
Huh?
Do you think Darth Vader liked drinking soda?
I mean, how would Darth Vader drink soda? He had no mouth.
Yeah.
Well, okay, he had a mouth, but you know what I mean.
Luke, I am your cola.
Darth Vader is a cola daddy. Oh, and I want that. I want that to be a thing now. I want a... You know how EA had the entire, like... Well, shit show, frankly.
Yeah.
With the Star Wars thing and nobody wants a pink Darth Vader. I now want a Darth Vader that's done up in Coca-Cola livery. It's just got a giant Coca-Cola symbol on his cape. His little box at the front is just a vending machine of choices of the different flavors.
No. No.
Oh, that's brilliant. I want that to be a thing now. If anyone's a whiz with Photoshop, I would love to see that. Please. Please. Well, how about this one? Mm-hmm. Given that we have just done Locktober, and that for some of us it is still ongoing, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, what?
Yes, sir.
Good boy. What are the benefits of putting your husband into chastity?
Like, assuming that your husband actually wants to be put into chastity in the first place. You don't.
Of course, always assuming consent here.
Yeah. There are a lot of things. Like, putting someone into chastity doesn't automatically make them submissive.
It does not.
First of all. It does.
It does not. That's fair.
Tend to make them quite horny.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after a couple of days.
Oh, yes. Well, as we said in the chastity episode, I think it varies person to person.
It does. It does. I'm saying it tends to. Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, it's just chastity play. It makes people horny. It makes you up for play. Time to kind of experiment on more things.
I mean, I've never had a husband, let alone put one in chastity.
Okay.
But I would say a potential benefit is you get to dictate the sex life a lot more. From my perspective. From my perspective as a dom key holder, like, there's definitely a bit more control in the bedroom around the way that we do certain things, in my experience. Not saying that's the case for everyone, just saying that's been my experience.
Now, the question asker has only mentioned putting their husband in chastity, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that they are the dominance in the relationship, they are, you know, or anything beyond just chastity. So let's
not assume anything and hit this from all angles.
Yeah. So, again, I wouldn't say putting someone into chastity automatically gives you the control.
That's fair. But in my experience... As somebody who is a dominant switch, it tends to be that if I'm putting someone in chastity, then I'm putting them in chastity as my submissive.
Yeah, yeah.
Not always, but it tends to be.
It tends to be. So if that is the case, then yeah, you kind of have more control over the scene. Yeah. Is it a benefit?
I mean, I guess that depends on your relationship, like, because it adds pressure. Like, if you're taking more control over the sex life, then that in turn does add some pressure, which we kind of spoke about last week on the Switch episode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a benefit, but it's also one that comes with its own downsides.
Indeed. Yeah. If the person who is in chastity have more expectation on the other side as well.
Well, this is it, and I'm going to kind of break our back and forth and say there's a follow-up question here as well, which is not from the same questioner, but like that we found, like, what are the benefits? We just did that one. Does male chastity improve sexual intercourse?
Maybe.
I would say it depends on what side you're on.
Yeah.
Although I don't think there's ever been an occasion where I've been either the key holder or the guy in chastity that I would say it's been detrimental. Just, it's not always an improvement. Sometimes it's just on the same level.
Yeah, it's just maybe. I would say people in chastity are probably more willing to experiment with different kinds of sexual intercourse, including like anal sex and that kind of thing.
Sometimes, yeah. I would say that could be a thing sometimes. I think the thing to remember is people are people. Mm. And it's all well and good as sitting here and going, yeah, it'll be this. It's different for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, this is our experience.
Yeah. Okay, this is a weird one. This is a weird one. Okay, does a true sadist prefer not to have a safe word available for a session?
I have an opinion here. Whether it will be a popular one.
Okay.
Well, I would start by saying define a true sadist.
Yeah.
But my thing would be this. Any true practitioner of kink and BDSM, if they are a actual true practitioner of kink and BDSM, does not play without a safe word. I don't give a fuck how much experience you've got. I don't give a fuck if it's your kink. As far as I'm concerned, do not play without a safe word.
Mm.
It's a hard limit for me, so that's not going to be something that I can really say anything much more than that on. What about yourself? What's your opinion?
Yeah, it also implied that there are kind of fake sadists.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's several layers to this question that makes me raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, also, sadists tend not to be the people who use the safe word.
I mean, okay, is that true?
It tends not to.
I wouldn't call myself a sadist, but there's definitely been times as a dominant that I've used the safe word instead of the sub.
I agree.
I don't see why it wouldn't be the same as a sadist, using it over the masochist in that situation.
I mean, the thing tends to be, if the dominant wants to stop the scene, they don't really need to shout out a safe word, they can just stop.
Yes and no. I mean, I think safe words are a useful thing just for indicating a juncture.
Yeah.
But maybe this is a personal style thing.
Like, from my perspective, you can have alternatives to safe words. So if you kind of respect the nose anyway,
mm-hmm.
if that's what you agree on a scene, then you don't need a safe word. You can just say, no, I'm not, I don't want to do this.
Counter argument, in that situation, the no is the safe word.
Yeah. Yes, so it's not what people traditionally think of as a safe word, which is,
it's still a valid safe word.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's not fall into this trap of going, oh, there's no such thing as no in BDSM. No, there is.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's what you want to tell the person that's your safe word, then tell the person that's your safe word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
that's it, really.
Okay. How about this one? Because this is something that would this is a serious one, because this is something that we haven't actually touched on in any of our gear episodes.
Right.
Do fetish models like being in gear, or do they just do it to get paid for modelling?
Well, depends. They probably do like being in gear. I think the kink companies tend to look for particular models
mm-hmm.
who are into the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think so, but I can't be 100% sure. I'm not there.
I mean, let's be honest. None of us can speak for anyone else. But in my experience, having spoken to gear manufacturers and people that have modeled for manufacturers, etc., usually, I think, at least with the specialist brands, it tends to be that the people that are modeling enjoy that particular type of gear.
Yeah. I think the more mass market the brand is.
Yeah, I think that's when you start getting into that difference. But I think definitely if you're going to kind of some of your specialists, I'm not going to mention them because don't want to like offer free advertising, etc. Because yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. But because there's loads out there, and where you are depends, and you know, support your local creators, etc. Mm-hmm. But like, I think generally the specialists and the local creators, etc. Like when they get someone modeling, it's because that person wants to model and wants to be in that gear.
Yeah, and I will say one thing: I think they hired the specialist photographers as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Again, not going to mention any, but we know a few specialist photographers, and like, I know for sure that like they get talked to for these sort of shoots as well. Because you want the thing is, the especially for your specialists, etc. And again, mass market slightly different, but like, mm-hmm. you want someone who understands what you are doing, what you are trying to show, and what people enjoy about these particular things. And that's a thing that comes out of a combination of a photographer that understands the scene, maybe not necessarily that particular type of gear, etc., but understands the scene that they're working within, and a model that understands what the gear, etc., is. And that's when you can get that really good sort of dynamic and fusion working.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you think Schadenfreude is a mild form of sadism?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I think it depends on the kind of Schadenfreude. I can definitely see how it could be.
Yeah. And for people who don't know what Schadenfreude is?
Happiness at the misfortune of others. Schadenfreude, stop this before we get copyright. Would that be Schadenfreude?
What, I mean, that we get copyright for that?
Yeah. It can be copyright. Oh my god. It can be Schadenfreude. It can be a type of sadism, I guess. I think it just entirely depends on the kind of misfortune that you're taking pleasure in. I know there's definitely been times where people have seen like clips of people getting like kneading the balls and things like that, like just like from news segments and things, yeah. And they've got a thing for CBT. It's just like, okay.
What about watching
like
that?
That's definitely a mild case, you know?
Yeah. What about watching that frat boy realize what he just put his dick in?
Do any of us believe they're actually frat boys? like, come on, guys. Like, not to ruin the illusion for y'all, but like, it has to be consensual because, you know, otherwise that's a problem and that's an entire fucking, you know, I have problems with that kind of thing. Like all these like bait busts and everything else is like, guys, I get the suspension of disbelief, but I just can't do it because I just look at it and I'm just like, no. Okay, so this is another serious one, but I literally don't know the answer to this, and I think you might. How did the Triskelion become the international symbol of BDSM? And How did the Triskelion become the international symbol of BDSM, and what do its parts represent?
Okay, so for those who don't know what the Triskelion is, that's the...
It's a thing in Marvel, isn't it?
Anyway, the Triskelion is the circle with the three quadrants with kind of a slightly curvy line dividing them three, and then each kind of segment had a dot in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That's the symbol. So we think the Triskelion came from the story of O.
The story of O.
Which was a really, really old BDSM story. I think it's a straight story, so I've not read it, but
I've never heard of it.
It's quite well known, I think. It's quite well known.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because it was so popular, it kind of just became the symbol for BDSM, and people interpret the three segments to mean various different things.
Right, okay.
So, we think they represent the, well, as mentioned, the three separate parts of the acronym BDSM or BDDSSM.
Okay. That makes sense.
And also the three principles of BDSM: safe, sane, consensual.
Okay, but where's Rack?
Yeah. Rack is a more modern concept.
True, although I think they both have their space, to be fair.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Not saying one is better than the other, but yeah, back then when this was conceived, it was just safe, sane, consensual. The acronym RAC didn't quite exist back then. And apparently some people argue the three stands for the dominance, the switch, and the submissive.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that
kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that is like a clear three segments, though. It's more of a spectrum.
But by that merit, wouldn't you say the same thing about how it represents the three different areas of BDSM?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you can have bondage and discipline and the dominance and submission overlap.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Totally.
So, you know, the same way that you can have your dom, your switch, and your sub, you can have those overlap in different ways as well. Maybe not quite as interchangeably.
I see where you're coming from, but
I'm not saying I subscribe to this, because this is the first time hearing of this is what it means. I'm just saying, like, I can kind of see the logic.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're just kind of... I think the symbol...
I just think they're three segments that look pretty on the flag.
I think the segments that existed first, and then people just put meanings to them afterwards. It wasn't really what they were aiming for. Honestly.
Fair enough. Well, the more you know, I guess.
So, how would a kinbakushi tie a load to the roof of the car?
What did you call me?
Not you. Didn't call you anything. A kinbakushi.
What is a kinbakushi?
You know what? You know a kinbaku? You know kinbaku? To tie someone very tightly is a Japanese word.
Oh, wait. I thought the name for this was shibari.
No, shibari means to tie someone in the elaborate rope work that they do.
Okay.
So the rope work, the art of the rope work is shibari.
Right, okay.
To tie someone tightly is kinbaku.
Oh, okay. The more you know. I did not know this was a thing with a specific term. Well, based on the description that you just gave me, I'm going to say tightly. Because what else am I meant to say here? I mean, I don't know what the load is. I don't know what the car is. I don't know anything about, like, tying things to cars. So, you know, I'm just going to say tightly.
With rope, probably.
Well, okay, fair. I don't know. This is the first time I've heard that term. And what relevance does it have to the car? Are you tying your sub to the car? Because that's not safe. Like, let's go back to SSC and rack, people, you know?
The roof of the car, absolutely not. So don't do that. But yeah, kinbaku, Japanese rope bondage term to tie someone tightly. Kinbakushi, okay. Someone who practices that.
I'd never heard this term before today.
And in the same vein, like, since we're talking about Asian culture, someone asks, in gay culture, why are Asian men often perceived as submissive rather than dominant?
Because people are uneducated and haven't taken the time to see above their own parapet and realise that stereotypes are not in any way a definite article, and that a lot of the time they are steeped in misinformation.
Yay! Good answer.
I hate that bullshit. It's just like, oh, like the Asians, so they must be submissive. No.
No.
Like, no. Like, what the hell?
Like, But why do you think there is such a perception, apart from, okay, clearly, ignorance?
I think it's because people extend it out from really bad TV tropes in terms of, like, the submissive side of things, and really bad and damaging porn tropes in terms of, like, stereotypes about penis size and sort of general body type, etc., that, like, porn is always very keen to promote, which is all fucking bullshit. Let me ask you this. Have you encountered this stereotype a lot? Because it's interesting as... Well, it's interesting to me because you are someone who is Asian, who identifies as being predominantly submissive.
Yeah.
So, like, have you, like, bumped up against these stereotypes a lot? And if so, like, how do you tend to kind of refute some of the more, let's say, problematic?
I mean, it doesn't help that my recon profile literally says, like, 70% submissive.
But it's what you are. But yeah. The thing is, like, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like, there's a lot of other stereotypes that run with it.
Yeah. From my perspective, like, the Asian thing doesn't really come up that often. Like, people don't... I can't tell if people have seen my profile, see that, oh, I didn't have a submissive, and then they kind of start... kind of negotiating with me, with me as a submissive, or would they have seen that animation and then see, and then kind of negotiate that way? Like, there's no way for me to know.
Yeah. What about on the scene? Like, where people don't have the benefit of having seen that in your profile first?
Well, I would point you back to. Like, a couple of episodes ago, when we're talking about switching, that people think of me as a switch on the scene.
That's fair.
Also, there's this another thing. People tend to think younger guys as more submissive to start with.
That's very true.
And when I was first on the scene... I was quite young.
Legal?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, no, I would say that's a fair thing to point out as well. I think it's one of those things that, like, there is an oddity in... Well, I think it's an oddity in gay culture as a whole, but I think there's definitely an oddity within kink culture that... We are a subgroup within a subgroup.
Yeah.
And there are people that are all too willing to then further stereotype in there when, you know, guys, we have been the victim of this multiple versions in.
Yeah.
Why are we perpetuating this bullshit?
I think there is a thing on kind of just... kind of mainstream culture as well, about kind of the Asian people, how they are kind of docile, and is that a right word?
Yeah, there's the model minority myth as well.
Yeah, that. And that's probably an influence on this as well.
I think it's one of those. I think at some point we probably need to sit down and like finally get our race and kink episode put together.
Yeah.
Which is something that we have been talking about since basically day one. It's just like, I know, like, because that's one that I'm very eager for you to lead, because obviously I'm a white guy and I know jack shit on this side of things. And it's like, I know it's one thing that we've been talking about. It's just like, how do we do this in a way that's going to be effective, I guess? But yeah, like, I think that's definitely something that we will be following up on at some point. But you know, I don't want to like get anyone's hopes up that that's going to be a quick thing, because it's, we want to make sure we do that right.
Oh yeah, yeah, we have to do that one right.
Like there are definitely topics that we take much longer. Like as much as this is like we real talk for a minute. As much as we sit here to have conversations about different things, we definitely have topics that we sit back on and go, okay, we need to talk about this a lot more before we go in and talk about this.
Yeah.
We need to talk about talking about talking about this.
Yay!
Okay, so I have one last question for us, like, just so we end on a little bit of a high note, because, okay, like, I'm not saying that's not an important question that we've just been talking about, but let's end on, like, a bit of a silly one, shall we?
Sure.
How do you establish dominance at KFC?
Wait, what?
How do you establish dominance at KFC?
Okay.
It's a straightforward question.
Sure. Be the rank above colonel.
Okay, that's actually a fair answer I wasn't expecting. I don't know my military terms, so I can't admiral, I guess.
What is the rank of colonel?
Well, no, it wouldn't be admiral, would it? Because that's navy, colonel's army. I don't know, actually. This is how little I know about, like, military culture. Commander? Noel? I don't know. Anyway.
Next higher rank, brigadier general.
Brigadier general, okay. So be the brigadier general. Wait. Does that mean that the Brigadier General is one for finger licking? See, I was just going to say T-pose for dominance. This went an entire different way to what I was thinking. Oh, I now want that to be a thing. I want someone to get a Brigadier General uniform and turn up at KFC. And just try issuing an order. Or better, a Brigadier General just turn up and T-pose for dominance as they issue an order. Wait, does that make the staff privates? With that, shall we call that an end to the
the team? I've gone off the rails now.
Oh, I love it. So, I don't think we're going to do a 5-minute Marvel this week, because there hasn't been anything new come out, and I think we've reached a point where we've talked about the majority of it, unless you've got something you want to hit.
To be fair, Eternals are in the cinema right now, today.
Yes, today, but neither of us have seen it yet.
Nope.
So, something to look forward to for next episode.
I haven't seen...
I managed to avoid all of them. Yeah, I've managed to avoid everything after the first two.
Yeah.
So, with that then, let's move straight over to the joysticks.
Mm-hmm.
As we say, what's on your joystick, Chris?
Oh, wait. This is 5-minute Marvel, isn't it? Because I've been playing Marvel's Avengers.
Oh, okay. Roll the tape.
Yeah, okay, I'm not going to do the whole countdown, so I'm just going to do the intro and talk about it. Oh my god, what the fuck is that?
Is it as bad as it looks? Because I saw it come onto Game Pass, and I looked at it and went, I'll install that. And then it got about 5% in and went, actually, I value my time more.
I mean, it's... Okay, firstly, it takes you... at least half an hour to get into any action whatsoever. The first half an hour, you're kind of just walking around this Avengers festival.
Okay, wait. is this the thing that they showed off at the reveal where you're walking around? Is it Kamala Khan?
Yeah.
Who is
Ms. Marvel?
Is it Ms. Marvel now?
Yeah, she is Ms. Marvel. Yeah.
Like, is it that bit that they showed off at like E3 and what have you?
I don't know. I don't know what they showed off at the E3.
They were showing off her basically entering a competition and being one of the finalists and meeting all the different Avengers.
Yes, yeah, that, okay. That's a bit.
I kind of liked... Well, okay. What I saw of that,
mm-hmm.
I kind of liked as a way of being an establishing thing. But it was one of those too... where it would be good as long as it followed up with enough substance.
It was so long.
Are we still talking about the game?
Yes. Oh my god, that bit of the game was so long, and
but it's optional, isn't it? No. I thought that you could pass through a lot of that without having to do all of it.
I didn't think so.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think so.
I haven't played it, so I don't know. But my understanding was you could skip through quite a bit of that.
You could be right. I didn't see a way to.
Fair enough. So the opening is overlong.
And then the controls, once you got into the first fight, when you kind of take control of each of the Avengers. I mean, mm-hmm. that was...
You should see the face that Chris is pulling right now. The look of non-impressed... Are you really making me talk about this is palpable.
The controls were horrendous. I mean, essentially, there were three moves that you can really do.
But Chris, they took so long making each Avenger feel unique, and like they all had powerful things that they were doing.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. They all control the same way.
How far through the story did you get?
I am...
Oh, whoa. That's present tense. Are you still playing this?
Well, I'm haven't played it for a while. I haven't played it for a few days.
Do you intend to finish it?
I don't know, because I've started new games now.
Fair enough.
But I was like 60% through chapter one. Out of four.
Jesus. Like, I know how many hours you've put into that already.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of, like, experience grind, or is it just that long?
No, it was just that long.
I'd argue bang for your buck, and then I remember it's a microtransaction-laden situation, or at least it was. Like, apparently they're walking back the whole...
I've seen the microtransaction. It's bad.
Well, apparently they're walking back the experience side of that.
Hmm.
That was something that came out in the last couple of days, if I remember my headlines correctly. But I'll be very honest, I didn't go very deep into that headline, so take that with a big grain of salt, because, frankly, every review that I saw for that game was less than praising, beyond those that were very clearly shilling for it.
Yeah, honestly,
and
do you have the biggest franchise in the world at the moment? And this is what you do with it?
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, it's a shame, because I really wanted a game like that. And I said this when Titanfall came out. Like, this is before the podcast, but I was saying it to friends before when Titanfall came out. The thing with Titanfall was interesting mechanics poorly utilized.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Avengers is interesting idea with poor mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the flight in Titanfall, for example, is almost the perfect way that you want to do an Iron Man costume.
Yeah.
The guns, on the other hand, is an entirely different thing, but the flight controls were almost the perfect way you'd want to do an Iron Man costume.
Flying was very, very difficult.
Yeah, I've heard that it's rough.
Yeah. Because you have to fly and aim at the same time, which was kind of just impossible.
Well, it struck me that it was as much a problem of flying and aiming at the same time as it was that the environments just didn't actually let you do that.
Because the camera is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the relatively small environments to try and do that in, from what I understand. It's like, if you're going to do a flying thing, do a large environment where you can maneuver around significantly.
Yeah. I mean, there was a bit of the game where it kind of was controlling Iron Man and it became kind of an obstacle course, kind of had to fly through things. I mean, that was fun. That was, I kind of, yeah, the most fun I've had in the game. Didn't actually involve any shooting.
I mean, it struck me very much from every game, because I was interested in the game. And I watched gameplay when it released.
Mm.
Because I kind of had that nagging feeling with it. So I held off and I watched gameplay when it released. And it very much struck me that this was a game designed to be a cash cow.
Yeah.
As much as they claimed otherwise, it struck me it was very much the kind of game that was designed to be a cash cow. And here's the problem. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's Square Enix that puts it out there, isn't it?
It is Square Enix, yeah.
And it's Square Enix that also put out the Guardians of the Galaxy game.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. I know the Guardians of the Galaxy game is entirely single player. I get that. But I have enough bad taste in my mouth from the Avengers game, third party, from watching people play it and seeing the amount of bullshit that they pulled with that, that ever since day one, and I'm fairly sure I'm on the podcast at some point saying this, like, from day one that the Guardians of the Galaxy got announced, I looked at it and went, no, thank you. That game just has tarnished anything that's going to come out of that situation that looks similar.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame because there's so much you could do with that IP.
Exactly. It's just a shit game. There are some bits I'm like, how is the camera this bad?
Because people saw money. It's one of those. It's such a disappointment as well, because Marvel, in the MCU, Marvel's got such a good reputation for quality control.
Yep.
Like, even when it's misstepped, like, and arguably whether it is a misstep or not, that's a whole other matter. But like, even when it's considered a misstep, such as Thor: Dark World, like, it's still not bad in terms of quality.
Yeah, no.
It's like, yes, there's definitely things wrong, but it's not terrible. It's just not the quality you've come to expect.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how did this get through when Disney and Marvel are so hot on their quality control when it comes to their brand? That's what I don't understand.
Nah. But, yeah. I'll go back to playing Hades.
I think I'll be swerving it fully then.
I'll go back to playing Hades.
I wouldn't mind a Hades version of... a Hades-like version of an Avengers game. That could be interesting. Although I guess they kind of did that with the... what's it called? Marvel Heroes 3, is it? The one that released on Switch. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. And it's not a true, like, Hades-like. But, like, if it was anything... Like, I've not played this yet. It's on my list to get to. If it was anything like the old games that they had on the PSP and the older generation in the same series, it was kind of that over-the-shoulder brawler thing that sort of... It struck me very much they were trying to do with the Avengers...
Okay.
Because it struck me they were trying to do this sort of over-the-shoulder-ish kind of Destiny-like type thing.
Right. I've got no idea what it is.
Fair enough. The Marvel Ultimate Alliance series was a fun series. I spent hours playing those games as a kid.
Okay. But yeah, that was Marvel's Avengers.
or wasn't. As the case may be. I mean, let's be honest, the characters kind of look like the discount Halloween gear that you get as
oh,
well.
Yeah. And I still don't understand their Hawkeye's costume.
I haven't even seen it, so...
It just looks like a guy.
I mean, you
I mean, he already does, but...
at the risk of doing a disservice even to Jeremy Renner, yeah. Like...
But even more, like, just a guy. I'm like, You're just wearing literally a purple t-shirt.
Seems on brand. Fair enough. So that would be a solid avoid then.
I mean, by all means, go see what it's like. Don't spend too long.
Do it on Game Pass, where you're getting everything else as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, your joysticks then.
On my joysticks, not much new, to be honest. Like, it's been a little bit of a minute since we recorded last, but in terms of having time to play, it hasn't for me, because I've been busy like running around doing things for my graduation that's coming up. However, I did finally get a chance to sit down like late last night and this morning with Animal Crossing's 2.0 update for New Horizons. Which I haven't got very far in, but it's been interesting going back to my island. Everything is overrun with weeds.
Naturally.
Yet somehow I've still got Lily of the Valleys. Okay.
I don't think they ever go away.
I got some of the upgrades that have come through, although a lot of them I don't have the money for. Thank you, Tom Nook. One of the ones that I did pick up, though, was the what they're calling the Pro Camera, which lets you get a first-person mode and a tripod mode. Which is actually really kind of cool to like wander around your island and kind of get that first-person view.
Yeah.
However, they managed to mess it up.
Wait, what?
Because you can get first-person view, sure, but you only get first-person view looking straight forwards.
Oh.
You cannot rotate your camera at all.
Oh.
Which is so disappointing, especially like when you're at sunset and things. Like I was playing a little bit before the sunset today.
Yeah.
Because the sun will be off to one side and you'll kind of get this hint of a sunset, but you don't get the actual sunset, which is really disappointing.
No. Okay.
Because like sometimes, like especially on my island, because of the way I build it, sometimes I want to just kind of tweak the camera like 5-10 degrees left. Like, I don't even want to get, like, a full 90 degree, although that would be nice. I just want to be able to kind of look ever so mildly to the side. But unfortunately, you can't do that.
That's not what I thought when you said first person view.
Yeah, it's strange because it's just like you kind of go in. It's like a locked on rails first person type of thing. It's don't get me wrong, it's interesting and it's definitely nice to see the island that I've made from that perspective. And it means that like I'm actually able to see some of the things and they've kind of worked the way I envisioned in my head. But then there's other things that it's just like, I want to be able to turn and look at the...
Yeah,
you know.
I don't understand why they can't do it.
I mean, we know models. They can because modders have done it.
Yeah, the 3D model is there. Why?
Well... There's a series on YouTube called Boundary Break, and they actually got a mod that let them turn the camera.
Yeah.
They're not all fully modeled at the back.
Okay, back of
the 3D models are only actually kind of mapped texture wise from the angles that you see.
Yeah, okay. Just okay, not the back of buildings, but
Yeah, like, I don't see why you can't at least have just a little bit of lateral movement.
Yeah.
But it's what it is. I mean, it's definitely an interesting update.
And honestly, how many buildings there are in Animal Crossing? Not that many. Just...
Well, this is it, and it's like, it's a pretty hefty update. It's a couple of gigabytes, like, download, and it's just like, you could have done it, guys.
Yeah.
Apparently it's the last free content drop that we're getting.
Yeah.
Which
so they say. It's alright.
I'm disappointed with it, but, you know, it's what it is. I mean, the game in itself is already significantly, like, given me plenty of time sort of thing.
Yep.
As for the DLC, I'm going to be picking it up at some point, I think.
Mm.
But I think I'm not necessarily in a rush to get to it.
No, I agree.
Because I want to have that... My thing is, like, it's great they've released this DLC, and it's great they've released the patch 2 at the same time. But I want to spend some time with just patch 2, and then have more content to go to later, rather than buy them both now and burn it all up. Because the thing with Animal Crossing is, because it hit during the pandemic, everyone did everything straight away, and that's one of the reasons why people felt there was, like, a massive, like, content dearth. Not that there wasn't problems with some of the limited content, but, like, that's one of the things that people complained about. It's just like, oh, well, I've done everything. It's like, okay, get that, but, you know? So I kind of want to have that time to have that gap.
They have been dropping content and events, and I still haven't gone back, so, yeah. And also, I didn't do everything in Animal Crossing. I didn't finish everything.
Mm. I'd say it's definitely a time to, like, jump back on and have a look at it. Yeah. And I do like the fact that they put ordinances back in from previous titles, which means that, you know, for someone like me, who is a bit more of a night owl, you can set it up so that your people and your stores and everything are open later into the day. Instead of, like, waking up right as everything's closing, if your sleep schedule's, like, misaligned for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of been what's on my joystick, even though, like, I'm only barely in it, so, like, I might update this next show when I've had a chance to mess with it a bit more.
Cool. And I'll talk about a different game next time.
Indeed. But yeah, I think that's everything for today, Chris.
I think it is.
Happy anniversary. Well, happy podcast anniversary. Not our anniversary.
Slightly different.
It's been an interesting year, and we definitely have some interesting times to come, I think.
More to come, definitely.
Yeah. But for now, I will say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And so but before we go, where can people find us, Chris?
People can find us on social media platforms at TBNJ Podcast. You can find all our links at linktree.ee/TBNJ podcast.
You do this every time. It's the typical Linktree URL with Linktra. TBNJ podcast on the end.
People know what I mean.
And if the people want to leave us a voicemail, where can they go, Chris?
It will be at anchor.fm/TBNJ podcast.
Indeed. I have been Sai.
And I've been Chris.
Thank you very much for a very interesting year hosting the podcast and your support along the way. And goodbye.
Bye.
This episode of the Teabags and Joysticks was produced by TBNJ Sai. The soundboard consisted of royalty-free audio, with the exception of a short 5-second clip of From Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, owned by Disney. The Quarter Conundrum intro and outro music is created by DOAK. Thank you for listening.